Let's do the lecture verse. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So this talk could be called Faith and Perseverance or Never Giving Up. And as a prelude to this talk, I want to read something. Wait, that's not it. Well, I'll read it if it's here. Okay. So read something, a quote from the Dalai Lama. And he says, never give up, no matter what is going on, never give up. Develop the heart. Too much energy in your country is spent developing the mind instead of the heart. Develop the heart. Be compassionate, not just to your friends, but to everyone. Be compassionate. Work for peace in your heart and in the world. Work for peace, and I say again, never give up. No matter what is happening, no matter what is going on around you, never give up. So I think he makes the point there of never giving up. I haven't offered a Dharma talk for over a year now, a Sunday Dharma talk, that is, because I hit a rough patch in my training about that time. But Reverend Amanda, who was going to give the Sunday Dharma talk today, fell and broke her wrist on Thursday and felt she couldn't give the talk. And so I offered to do it. And I celebrated my 50th ordination anniversary on Thursday, and I was told I could talk about what I've learned in those 50 years. So this won't be everything, but it will be some of the things that I have learned, and I hope that it will be helpful to you. I was ordained along with Rev. Master Daiswi, who was the head of our order for a while, who died some time back, and another lay trainee who later disrobed. This was in September of 1973. Let's see where I am. I was a mess when I came here, and I really mean that. For the first time in November of 1972, I was desperate because I was suffering so deeply and had a deep fear that life was meaningless. I put up with a lot, and it was pretty rough here in those early years because I was desperate. To name a few, we used cold water, except for showers, and most of our buildings weren't heated, and our sleeping accommodations were a bit rough at times. And it was hard. It was hard in those days. But I was desperate, and I was young. When I came here for the first time, something felt right in my guts. Something resonated. The teaching made sense. I came back for another weekend in December and a week the following January. And then I came for 3 months. I actually thought I would solve all my problems in those 3 months and then go back to the world to do what I wanted to do. Of course, you know I was wrong. However, within those 3 months, it became clear that it was going to take a lot longer, and I decided to become a monk. Now, this wasn't some great revelation or something coming, you know, saying, become a monk, it's right. It was the other layperson who was there, who was actually ordained with me, said to me, I've decided to become a monk. And I said, okay, that sounds good. And that's really how it happened, unless I've forgotten something. But I was actually surprised when I asked Reverend Master Jiyu, and she just said yes, without hesitation. So I'm very glad of that. The first thing I learned here was that I was the source of my suffering, and it was caused by indulging greed, anger, and delusion when they would arise. I didn't really believe this at first. I thought I suffered because of the way the world was, and I thought I didn't have any greed, anger, and delusion. But very soon, I saw that I was wrong. I came to the monastery with little faith and a good swatch of cynicism. When I was having great doubts in both myself and the teaching, and was actually thinking of leaving, Reverend Master Jiyu seemed to sense this and asked me to leave. She told me that she had faith in me, but if I didn't have faith in myself, she couldn't teach me. And I think this was very skillful that she did this at that time, because as soon as I left, I wanted to come back, but she didn't let me. When I was away, I spent a lot of time meditating, and eventually I was allowed to return. Over the years of continually trying to do the practice to the best of my ability, going to meditation every day, having some glimpses of reality, some periods of stillness, peace, and some insights, my faith grew, and I was able to look back and see that I had changed. I believe that faith grows if you act with faith, even if you don't feel it. If you train, things do change. What kept me going was not only a deep knowing within myself that I had to keep going, but also a longing to be one with my true nature. And I think that's what's really kept me here all these years. I thought I read a quote from Great Master Dogen in his Shobogenzo, in which he exhorted his novice monks to train diligently, because that would get the wheel rolling in the right direction, and eventually the training would carry you along. However, I've never been able to find that quote again. So I believe this to be true, and I will talk about it more later in this talk. Read what I've written some of these places. I also took refuge in Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of great compassion. I have spent a lot of time in the Avalokiteshvara shrine over there. I spent a lot of time in there meditating and asking for help, especially in my early years as a monk. I think it's really important to ask for help and trust that help will be given. The help may not come in the way you expect or would like, and may not show itself for a while, but it will be there. It takes faith to ask for help, faith to listen and see and accept that you need to, and accept what you need to do to move forward. I think that faith, asking for help, softens the heart and allows the help to be seen. I had a dream once, which I have mentioned at least once in a Dharma talk before, which was a very kind of profound dream for me. It was I was in a restaurant with my family, and it was very dark, a despairing, suffering darkness. I finally got up from the table and walked down a dark corridor in which I saw suffering beings on both sides of the corridor. I think I came to a door that led outside, and then suddenly I was in a light, spacious room with a very kind lady, which I believed to be Avalokiteshvara. I asked her how I had gotten there, and she said, "You cried out for help." So that still gives me goosebumps. I believe I have done two other talks on perseverance, and this is the third, but each one has been at a different point in my training. In my early years as a monk, I was very selfish. I was continuing to suffer a lot and just wanted to find an end to it. I was told by Reverend Master Jiyu, via Reverend Master Daizui, and others since then, that it was important for me to stop focusing so much on my own suffering, but to be more generous, make offerings, help other beings, and let go of my focus being only on myself. I didn't get it at the time. You might think I was really thick as when I first came here. I didn't get it at the time, and I didn't do it. But I think the years of training have whittled away at my selfishness, and I now get it, and I'm trying to do it. It was actually being the guest master for several years that opened the heart of compassion for others within me and helped me to take the focus off myself exclusively. I remember reading what I believe was a Jataka tale about one of the lives of the Buddha, but again, I was never able to find it. I believe it was an elephant who perhaps had injured himself and was in great pain. But instead of focusing on this pain, he did what was good to do and helped beings without expectations. And then one day he realized that the pain was gone. This story made a deep impression on me, but I still feared if I didn't focus on my suffering, the pain would never end. I kind of wanted certainty that it would end if I didn't focus on it. But eventually I saw I wasn't seeing things clearly and I was looking in the wrong direction. When I look back at my years of training, I can see that I have changed a lot. If we continue to train despite the difficulties, and I've had my share, you will change. You will more and more let go of the self, and faith grows deep within you that you can't deny. You know that you need to keep on going, doing the best you can, no matter what, or your suffering will increase and the pain will never end. As we continue, we see more clearly our karmic tendencies or habits, and we don't get so pulled off by them. This is a gradual process. And still always, training is a challenge. Karmic tendencies can be strong. There is no such thing. Oh, in Buddhism, there is no such thing as failing. We just keep trying to do our best, even if we get sidetracked for a while. I think I'll skip that. Over a year ago, I was having a difficult time, and I was meditating in my room, and I started reading the scripture of Avalokiteshvara. And I opened up to Avalokiteshvara's compassion. And there were actually tears in my eyes because I finally experienced this great compassion. And it was such a relief. But soon after that, I plunged down into a hell. And this was really a hell. I understand now what happened, but at the time, it was pretty rough. I could see no way out of it, no road ahead. And I could understand why people committed suicide. It was that bad. But of course I wouldn't. I asked for help from my fellow monks, and they were very kind. I was very scared of what would become of me, yet even then I knew I had to do my training. One monk told me that in my suffering I had become very kind to others, so there's benefits in everything. And gradually a way opened up for me, a way out of hell, and I followed that path. I am no longer in hell, and still it had been a very difficult year. But it's okay. And I have to say that deep down inside, I have the faith to know that I have to train. I told another monk that I felt separate from training during this time, and she said, "No, you are not. You're just having a difficult time. We all do." Something has been going through my mind lately. If I make my bed in hell, thou art there. It's from a psalm. It was a journal article of Reverend Master Khotan, and it's very short, so I'll read it to you. The following is a story I cannot prove that the events happened exactly as described. I can only repeat what was told to me. In Berlin of the 1920s, there was a young man who was an inmate of a house of prostitution. How he came to be there, I do not know. Probably he was forced into it as a boy or fell into it as a result of poverty. And in any case, wealthy old men now paid to watch him rape other men, and life in this hell realm had continued in a seemingly unending cycle for as long as he could remember. Sometimes during the day, he would go for long walks in the suburbs of the city just to get away and forget for a while. It was during one of these walks that he came upon a large estate surrounded by a stone wall, which had fallen down in some sections. Inside the wall were extensive gardens and trees, including huge rose bushes. Overcome by the beauty of the place, so different from his daily surroundings, he took to going there whenever he had a free moment. He would sit on the grass and forget for a while what he was and what he did for a living. Thinking the place to be some sort of park he had discovered that no one else knew about, he was startled one day to encounter an elderly man wearing what was obviously some sort of religious habit or robe, although he had never seen anything like it before. Over a period of time, he began to have conversations with the old man. The priest, or so he thought of him, never asked what he was doing there, or indeed anything about himself. He simply treated the young man as a friend, and perhaps as a result, the young man soon told him everything. When he was finished, "What can I do?" "Seek God," the priest replied. "How does someone like me seek God? Be gentle." It might seem strange to tell someone whose occupation was violent sexual assault to be gentle. We in our age of lifestyle and career choices often forget what it means not to have a choice. The priest's words fell like a seed into fertile earth. It was something for him that he could do. 15 years or later, when all such as himself were rounded up, along with many others, and sent to concentration camps, the man ended up at Buchenwald, where he died. In the camp, he was seen as somewhat of a saint because of the gentleness and compassion with which he cared for the dying, especially the more horrible cases that others found impossible to deal with. I will leave this story as it is, without commentary, except for the following, and this is from Psalm 139. "Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend to heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand shall lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, let only darkness cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to thee. The night is bright as day, for darkness is as light with thee." So, anyway, and I'll end with a quote from a card I was given for my 50th ordination birthday from the community, and it says, "I said to that which stands at the gate of the year, our footprints go side by side, yet in the bad times only mine are seen. Where wert thou then?" And it answered, "At all those times I carried thee safe in my womb."